Okay, so this year, as I think most of you know, maybe not all of you, because we may have a few newer people, we're studying the Four Noble Truths. And so at this point, we've started moving into the part of the series where we're working with each element of the Eightfold Path in depth. And the theme for this month is wise intention. And we've already had a couple of great talks from Suze and Arv on this topic this month. And as they've explained, right in or wise intention is the second element of the wisdom part of the Eightfold Path. And it's defined as approaching our life and practice with three major intentions: freedom from ill will, which we might also think of as goodwill or kindness, renunciation or non-clinging. And another good word that Tweri used for this intention in her talk Monday night was restraint. And finally, refraining from harming oneself or other beings. So, as Suze mentioned a couple of weeks ago, wise intention really follows from wise view. So, the more we understand wise view, the more we're aligned with wise view, the easier it is to have wise intention. So, for example, if we really can see the suffering that we experience when we get caught up in anger and aversion, if we can really see and feel the suffering we experience when we get caught up in greed and craving and just wanting that something that we can't quite get, then we're motivated to try to be kinder. We're motivated to try to be less trapped in our cravings. And in the same way, when we see the problems we cause for ourselves and for others, in the world, when we start acting out and doing things to cause harm that come out of our anger or come out of our greed, when we really see and recognize these things, we're motivated to stop these behaviors. So wise intention really comes from that wise understanding. And too, when we really see how impermanent everything is, even ourselves, we're also motivated to be a little less attached to our desires, to becoming something a little bit easier to let go. So overall, wise intention really orients our practice and points our practice towards realizing the third noble truth, which is the end of suffering, towards becoming less entrapped in hatred because we're cultivating kindness and non-harming, less entrapped in greed because we're cultivating renunciation, and less trapped in delusion because we're letting go of the beliefs and views we have that aren't really true, creating less suffering for ourselves and others because we're doing our best not to harm. So when we hear these wise intentions of kindness, of renunciation, and of non-harming, I think all of us probably think, oh yeah, this is really good. This is a good way to orient ourselves. And we think, yeah, this is how I'd like to align myself. This is how I'd like to behave. We can see, that these are good and wholesome things. And yet at the same time, it can be surprisingly difficult to really align ourselves with the wise intention in practice and in life. And maybe some of you have noticed this in the last couple of weeks while we've been working with this part of the Eightfold Path. It's very easy to understand and intellectually that these intentions are good, But as for truly committing to these intentions and really putting them into practice, not so easy. Arv talked about this last week, and he gave some great examples from our daily lives. You know, like when we get caught up in anger against bad drivers, or we have critical feelings about the people close to us. And these are things we can all really relate to. We all experience these kinds of things. And he also suggested some good strategies for working with those difficult emotions and impulses when they come up. Being mindful, so we recognize them, replacing them with something more wholesome, maybe redirecting our attention away from whatever this thing is that's upsetting us, reflecting on the drawbacks of getting caught up in unkind thoughts and behavior or in craving, and having some better understanding of what's behind those emotions. Maybe there's a fear or a feeling of being threatened that drives that anger. So one of the things I've noticed in myself, and maybe you've noticed too, is that, you know, not only is it hard to put these intentions into practice in daily life, but it's also not so easy to develop wise intention in relation to our meditation practice. You might think, oh, this is the place it's going to be easy, but not always. Without even realizing it, we can bring the same attitudes, intentions, and habits of mind to our meditation practice that we bring to our daily lives. Things like pursuing what's pleasant, avoiding and getting angry about what's unpleasant, you know, thinking we're in control of the whole thing and we can make happen what we want to happen and make it happen according to our own timeline. And if we're doing those kinds of things on the cushion in our meditation practice and not recognizing that we're doing that and reorienting ourselves, it's just that much more difficult to recognize those patterns and reorient ourselves among all the different stresses of daily life. You know, if we don't see it when we're doing our meditation, we don't get a chance to practice these things, these skills in a more maybe controlled and easier environment. And then when we go out in the world, it's all the more difficult. So it's not surprising, you know, that we have this problem. When we first begin our practice, most of us don't really know very much about the Four Noble Truths, or about wise view, or about wise intention. So it's not surprising that we bring the same kinds of intentions and attitudes to our meditation practice that we bring to all the other things that we do and that we try to accomplish in our lives. You know, we don't really know any other way. When we start our practice, we know that we want certain benefits from meditation, you know, maybe less stress and more calm, maybe more skill in working with difficult emotions. Maybe we want help with giving up habits that don't really serve us well. And these are all really wholesome and good motivations to practice meditation. There's nothing wrong with that. That's all fine. But we also have ideas about how to get those things. You know, we have this sense that, oh, we just need to learn these techniques, we need to do them right, and if we do that, we'll get what we want, and we'll get it when we want it. In other words, we'll get it pretty quickly. This is going to, you know, happen right away. Certainly, you know, if we take the beginning class, by the end, we've got a lot of progress. Maybe another year, you know, we've got this under our belt. Well, if it seems like we're not getting what we want, then we'll work harder. We'll do more. And if it still doesn't seem like we're getting what we want, then we feel like either there's something wrong with these methods or else there's something wrong with us and we can't do this. And this way of thinking is quite natural and it's really understandable. And I think I know I can relate to this and I have felt these things and I suspect that all of you can relate to this. But it's not exactly in line with wise intention. So when we bring our everyday intentions and views to meditation practice, there are some couple of different ways in which we're out of alignment with wise intentions. So I'd like to talk about this today, some of the ones I've noticed in myself and that you might have experienced too. And one of the first things we might find is that we aren't really aligned with an attitude of kindness in our practice. We say we want to be aligned with kindness and non-harming, but at the same time, we might bring an unkind or a judgmental attitude towards ourselves and to the things that arise while we're doing our practice. You know, sometimes it seems as if we feel that the intention towards kindness applies to everybody else except ourselves. So, you know, think about it. How often do we have ideas about our meditation, what it's supposed to be like? And then when it doesn't meet our expectations, we start to criticize ourselves. We decide we're bad meditators, or we bring unkindness and judgment to things that arise in our mind. You know, thoughts, oh, these shouldn't be here. Hindrances like craving, aversion, sleepiness, restlessness, and doubt. Oh, those are bad. They shouldn't be here. And I'm bad because they are here. This is the kind of attitude we sometimes have. Sometimes when we get frustrated with practice, we focus our irritation and ill will on the teachers or the teachings, but I think the most common thing is to focus that ill will on ourselves and on the things that we see in ourselves, that somehow we're unworthy or bad or we're not doing it right. And it's really important to start to recognize this attitude of self-criticism and self-judgment when it comes up. And especially the most important thing, we need to recognize it because it just is not true. We deserve kindness as much as any other being. And the fact that anger arises in our mind or craving arises in our mind, that doesn't mean we're a bad person. That just means we're a human being. This was what happens. And this attitude of criticism and self-judgment and that we're bad, not only is it untrue, but, you know, we really can harm ourselves with this attitude. And beyond that, all of this criticism and judgment really gets in the way of our ability to investigate and understand what's going on in our minds and our bodies. If our first reaction to something is, oh, this is bad, this shouldn't be here, I have to get rid of it, it's pretty hard for us to see it clearly or understand it. You know, we're so aversive, we don't want to investigate it. And in our practice, it's really the understanding that's important. It's the understanding that really frees us from the suffering that these so-called, quote-unquote, bad things bring. So we really need to pay attention to the instructions of the Buddha here in the Satipatthana Sutta, or the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, where he tells us how to practice meditation. He doesn't say, when anger is present, one knows there's anger in me, and that's bad, so I have to get rid of it. He says, when anger is present, one knows there's anger in me. Or when anger is not present, one knows there is no anger in me. And then he goes on to encourage us to understand how the rising of this anger happens, how abandoning the anger happens, and how it's not arising in the future happens. So it's really about understanding anger or whatever painful or difficult emotion it is that we're stuck in. It's arising and passing. And this is really a lot different from this attitude of, oh, I have to get rid of it. And the strategies that Ard mentioned last week can really come in here in understanding our difficult emotions. We can recognize that anger, for example, and bring mindfulness to it. And when we do that, even though that feeling of anger might still be present, we're observing it with mindfulness. We're not caught up in it. So in a sense, we replace the anger with mindfulness. We might redirect the mind to the body so the anger is felt but not fed with our thoughts. Or if the anger is too overwhelming to be with, we might even redirect the mind to the breath or to sound, or offer ourselves metta or compassion. So we work with these difficult emotions and avoid being swept away by them, rather than judging them or ourselves for the fact that they arise. So it can be hard to be attuned to that intention of kindness in our practice if our minds are all absorbed in self-judgment and criticism. But becoming to be attuned to the wise intention of renunciation is equally or maybe even more challenging. In fact, I think for me, this is the most challenging of the three wise intentions. And even the Buddha himself admitted that this was challenging, and that before he was fully awakened, while he recognized the value of renunciation, it didn't make his heart leap. So he was like, yeah, this is a good thing, but you know, I'm not so excited about it if I'm honest with myself. So renunciation is part of our intention to refrain from ill will and doing harm. Because to avoid ill will and harm, we need to refrain from our impulse to hurt others, refrain from getting all caught up in our unkind thoughts. To avoid harming ourselves, we might need to refrain from behaviors and habits that we know are not all that good for us, even if they're pleasant in the short term. And I think we all know, too, that even when we understand this need for restraint and renunciation, when we see that our anger or cravings or habits are causing suffering, it's not so easy to give them up. Those habits are really ingrained. It can take a lot of time and patience to do that. And it's not so easy either in our meditation practice. When we're doing our formal meditation, you know, we're not likely to get up and bop someone because we're mad at them. So restraint from harming others might not come up as much. But there's still plenty of need for restraint and renunciation. As I mentioned before, unkind and aversive thoughts come up. We can recognize them and refrain from getting entangled them through mindfulness, or replace them with compassion with ourselves. If we have pain in the back or the knee, we might renounce our immediate impulse to move. Take a little time to investigate the sensation and see what's really going on. When we're developing concentration, we might refrain from following the thoughts that arise in our minds and return to our breath. Or if we've had, you know, a good sitting with comfort in the body, lots of pleasant mind states, we might need to renounce our efforts and our desire to get back to that good sitting and be willing to be with whatever is arising. So a lot of times what needs to be let go of is the attitude that whatever is happening shouldn't be happening. It ought to be different. Something's wrong with my meditation and I'm not doing it right. I need to do something else to make it better. All those attitudes of judging, comparing, and fixing. Ones that we've talked about before how Philip Moffat encourages us to put those aside in our practice. And this is really important, but renunciation extends even beyond these kinds of things to other kinds of attachments that aren't so obvious. In the teachings, they talk about three kinds of craving. Craving for sense pleasures, you know, like good food, beautiful surroundings, comfort in the body, wealth. And also because in Buddhism, the mind is considered one of the six senses, this might include what we might think of as mind pleasures, things like ideas, views, opinions, theories, beliefs, all those kinds of things. Then there's craving for becoming. Craving to become something or to unite with some kind of experience. Craving for a certain identity. Craving for continued existence. Craving to be this ideal person we want to be. And then craving for non-existence. Craving not to experience what's unpleasant or not to be the person you think you are, but you don't feel like you should be. It might even extend to not wanting to even be here at all. So the sense pleasure craving we're usually pretty well aware of, but some of these other cravings for ideas and views, for becoming or non-existence, we might not recognize them so easily or think about them. So in his book on the Paramis, Ajahn Suchito talks about how a part of renunciation is letting go of being controlled by the pull of the senses, but goes on to say that it doesn't stop there. It goes on to other attachments. In his words, to status, to opinions, to who and how we assume we are. So it's really much bigger. Now, if we think about it, ideas and opinions about what our practice should be like, wanting to be something or someone that we sense we aren't and yet could or should be, not wanting to be what we think we are, how often do we bring these forms of craving into our meditation practice? Just, you know, consider. It's pretty common, right? I know for me it's pretty common. And in fact, I think it's really, really hard to avoid bringing these things in because these attitudes are so ingrained in us, so much a part of our daily life. And yet renouncing them is what we're encouraged to do. Relinquishing them on the cushion so we can start to relinquish them in the rest of our lives as well. And this is a really challenging thing, and even understanding what's being asked of us and its value actually takes some time. And I know in my own practice, when I first started, I was pretty far from these wise intentions, especially the ones involving renunciation. I didn't know much about wise intention. I'm not sure I'd even heard of it, or if I did, I wasn't really paying attention to it. My intention really was to have a good meditation experience, to get to that state of calm and happiness that I experienced before and just stay there. That's what I thought it was all about. Of course, it doesn't take too long for most of us to realize that things don't really work that way. And so I saw that too, and I had to let go of that intention. So after a certain time, I'd heard enough Dharma talks and I'd had enough experience of not being able to get what I wanted in every sitting to know that the path wasn't just about getting calm or having pleasant experiences. And I recognized it really was about the Four Noble Truths and about understanding the three characteristics, suffering and the end of suffering. So at that point, my intention was to have insights and make progress on the path. And in a way, this is good, but in another way, still bringing in some of these difficult attitudes. You know, having the aspiration to understand the Four Noble Truths is a really good direction, a really good intention. But for me, there was lots of confusion and delusion mixed up with this. You know, I had certain ideas about what experiences I was supposed to have based on what I'd heard or read. And I tried to make those things happen, not exactly knowing how to do that. And then when they didn't, I would feel disappointed or as if I'd failed or as if the meditation wasn't working. Instead of just being with whatever was happening, I was too caught up in my ideas about my practice and what I should be doing to be a good meditator, caught up in becoming something different, something better, a wiser being, a more awakened being, maybe, whatever that was. In other words, I was caught up in all of those cravings we just talked about, views, ideas, opinions, becoming. And then I wondered why I was frustrated with my practice. I mean, what else is going to happen? So it took me a while to even recognize these cravings as cravings and to see that this focus on having certain experiences or becoming something or someone were really keeping me from actually doing my practice, being with what was occurring in the present moment. It was building a sense of self, not dissolving it. And, you know, those tendencies to focus on experiences and becoming, I have to admit, these still are there and arise in me. I still have those times when I think I should be experiencing this and I'm worried about making progress in practice. I still find myself getting caught. But at least there's some understanding that I am getting caught, and that's, you know, something. It really takes time to fully embrace the intentions of kindness, renunciation, and non-harming. For myself, you know, I always saw these as noble intentions. But truly making them my own, well, it's been a lot more of a journey. And I think we can all understand why it's such a journey. It really takes a shift in view, away from being so goal-oriented and future-oriented to being in the present moment, away from being determined to get the results we want to being with what is, and away from becoming, even if it's becoming a good person or enlightened person, if that emphasis is so much on becoming this person. It takes a lot of renunciation of our mistaken views. So if you don't feel like you're at this level, don't be discouraged or feel like your practice isn't good. Having wise intention doesn't mean you're already carrying out that intention perfectly. It means you're moving in that direction. And if we don't fully understand what it means to move in that direction, then we just keep practicing and we'll see it. You might need to go through a stage where your main intention is to have a good meditation until you see the limits of that view. And I'm pretty sure we all have those times of trying to make things happen in practice, identifying with practice, being caught up in trying to be a good meditator or a meditator with lots of insights and wisdom or whatever. And we all have to experience for ourselves the limits of being attached to becoming anything, really. But it takes time to understand this. So that if it doesn't make sense to you now, don't worry too much about it. And if you do understand it, but feel like you keep getting stuck nonetheless, well, welcome to the club. You're not alone. I think we're all in this kind of struggle together. And I'm kind of going over time, but I'd like to very quickly mention something else about intention. This is a little bit of shift, but I think it relates to this whole object of getting in aligned with wise intention. And so I'll go ahead. In the teachings, there are two different words that are often translated as intention in English. First, there's the wise intention we've been talking about today. And the word for this in Pali is sankappo. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, but, you know, that's it. So sama is the wise or right, and the sankappo is the intention. So this word is more like an aspiration or the direction we aim for. And then there's the Pali word chetana. And this is also often translated as intention, but it's more like the impulse in the mind to act. So they're not quite the same thing, but definitely related. And it can really be helpful to pay attention to the chetana intentions and notice what's motivating our impulses to act. Some can be motivated by wise intention in the sankappo sense, kindness, renunciation, or non-harm. And then following through with our impulse, great. Others might be motivated, though, by greed or ill will or a desire to harm. And in those cases, we need to pause and refrain. So noticing these impulses and what kinds of intentions are motivating can help us to make wiser decisions. And in all of this, working with both types of intentions, it brings up the need for us to really practice mindfulness of mind. You might be familiar with the Burmese teacher Sayadaw Utejaniya, who really emphasizes this aspect of practice. And he encourages his students to pay attention not only to things like the sensations of the breath or the body, but to the attitude of mind in observing these things. Is aversion or ill will present? Is craving present? And this is something we can do when we work with intention. Just notice, what's our attitude of mind? Is it in alignment with wise intention? If not, we can pause, bring mindfulness, investigate, and restrain. And if it is, we know that. And we know and recognize that these wise intentions and attitudes are really possible for us and are part of this. And that's a really important aspect of practice too. So I'd like to end here a little over time, but not too much. And maybe pause for just a moment so we can check in this moment with our own attitudes of mind and intention. So now it's time for discussion, breakout rooms. So I'll break you into groups of three or four as we usually do. We'll have about 15 minutes for discussion, maybe a little bit shorter period to come back share. If you need to leave now and have things to do or just aren't in quite a discussing mood, this is a good time to say goodbye. And we're glad you were with us while you were with us. You can always rejoin in 15 minutes or so for the closing. So, okay, leave a moment here. And during your discussion, I'd encourage you to share your own experiences with wise intention, maybe especially as it relates to your meditation practice that I was talking about today. So I'll put you in your groups and enjoy your discussion. Hi, everybody, and welcome back. I kind of shorted you a little bit on your discussion because I talked too long, but I wanted to make sure that we had some time to share as we came back into the larger room and then a little bit of time at the end for me to do the announcements. So we're back together, and I hope you had some really interesting discussions. And so now we have time for you to share what you would like to share with the larger group. And you can, since there's not so many of us, you can use your virtual hand. That's always a good thing to do. Or you can also just wave your own hand and I'll see you. There's one screen. So please go ahead and we welcome your sharing, comments, questions, whatever you would like. Okay, Lillian and Nikhil.
Yeah, thanks for the talk, Lyndall. I really just appreciated that reminder of how some of these hindrances can just like appear in our mindfulness practice and just, you know, end up taking our intention and, you know, kind of just making a crowd create harm in ourselves unintentionally. I was curious if you had any thoughts. You know, something I think I've heard Kaveri mention before is kind of just like the feelings of intention. And it's something I sometimes have trouble balancing between having that acceptance of, you know, here's what these things were like, and then also trying to balance having that like steeliness of intention as well, like, you know, not just being okay with being able to kind of like bring that balance, I guess. I was curious if you had any kind of like thoughts on that or suggestions of like how you've worked with that before.
Oh yeah, sort of bringing into that balance speech. It's sort of like I think you're talking about finding what really is wise effort. Is that
maybe?
Right? Yeah,
maybe, yeah.
So bringing that balance of just accepting what it is with maybe doing what is needed, doing what is needed to maybe have a greater understanding or greater mindfulness. It's not easy. I mean, I think a certain amount of effort is necessary to, for me, I'm working with this myself. And I think a certain amount of effort is needed to be willing to show up, to be willing to pay attention, to be willing to let go of that tendency to get caught up in the content of our thoughts instead of just knowing that the thinking is happening, you know, being willing to actually do our sitting practice or to go on retreat or, you know, things like that. But I find when I get into trouble is when I have this sense of needing to make something happen that I think should be happening that's better than what is happening. So it's sort of like instead of being willing to sit with a restless mind saying, okay, I have to make this mind calm, that sort of thing. And sometimes it's not easy to tell the difference. But I think for me, I often find that if I'm kind of trying to make something happen, waiting for something different to happen, I know that I'm moving across that line where I'm starting to get into that craving for experience rather than being what it is. Does that help?
Yeah, that makes sense. Almost just having that intention, the effort towards just meeting the intention of having the awareness a little bit.
Yeah. It's a tough. I think it's hard to find the balance. I really do. That's a challenging thing for all of us. Yeah. Let's see, Thomas.
Yeah, thank you very much, Lyndall, for your talk. Really, really helpful. I'm kind of puzzled with the same thing we just talked about, sort of connecting wise view, wise intention and wise effort. And your talk really helped me, I think, get some better connection between the wise view and the wise intention. I think a takeaway I have from listening to you is around if you really with wise view, you sort of study, you know, where suffering is coming from with the help of the Four Noble Truths, you get a deeper understanding of what causes suffering, and with that naturally comes the intent to to not create suffering, reduce suffering, and that's motivation right there to go in and look at mindfully what's going on and what you can do to make people happier, have less suffering in the world. So that really connected for me. So I just really want to thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, definitely. You put it really well. You put it really, really well. It's so connected. So connected. You know, the view, the intention, the action. So thanks for that expression of it. Maybe clearer than mine in some ways. So thank you. And
I'm kind of following up on what Nikhil said and Thomas also, that what I shared in a small group is it really takes me to this over-efforting thing that I do. And what I've been practicing with is watching the desire to argue with what shows up and then make the decision, the intention to not argue. But first I have to feel what it feels like to want to argue with what shows up. Just that, like, almost first impulse is before words, before the words of this, it shouldn't be here. It's just that almost bodily sense of arguing. And my intentions have been for quite a while now of not arguing with what shows up and explore what that turns out to be. And I'm looking forward to a few months down the road when we're talking about effort, because I think we're going to revisit all this again and just really appreciate your talk and our focus. Thanks.
Thank you, too. That's a really nice way of putting that, of noticing when we're arguing with what's happening. When we're arguing with what's happening. Because, you know, that is a kind of an ill will coming up. And I think that description of it might be one that resonates and works for a lot of us. To realize when that's starting to happen, it's a time to sort of, oh, okay, back off.
It's not just ill will. It's a lot of selfing.
Well, that's true, too.
I'm arguing with it because there's a part of my brain that knows what's better and thinks I could make that happen.
Yeah. So, it's that.
Yeah.
Selfing is such a huge part of this, and this desire for becoming and being that person that has this view and does this right and understands this and taking everything that we do as part of me to enhance me. And it's so ubiquitous and hard, so challenging. So to end our meeting for today, I'd like to take a moment to share the merit of our practice. If there's someone special you want to share with, you can bring them to mind. So may these particular beings in need that we have in mind share in the merit of our practice today. May they be safe and protected, happy and peaceful. And then expanding beyond these to all beings, may all beings share in the merit of our practice, be safe and protected, happy and peaceful, and may we all be motivated by wise intention and move toward our deepest aspirations.